Before we get into today's episode, a quick listener note. This episode contains sensitive topics such as mental health struggles, eating disorders, and suicide. We understand that these can be challenging discussions, so if you're not in the right headspace for them at this time, please know you can always skip this one or come back to it at a later date.
Hello and welcome to Reasonably Fit. We're Jason and Lauren Pack, and this is the podcast for anyone who wants a more thoughtful and grounded approach to health and fitness.
In today's episode, we're interviewing Hollywood actor and mental health advocate Sarah Gilman. Sarah became well known for her role as Delia in the Disney Channel series I Didn't Do It, and she currently plays Penny on CSI Las Vegas. Not only has Sarah made a name for herself in the entertainment industry, but she's also a passionate advocate for mental health awareness. Through her personal experiences with OCD, depression, and eating disorders, Sarah has become a powerful voice for those struggling with their mental health, and she has used her platform to encourage others to seek help when they need it. In this episode, we'll delve into Sarah's personal journey with both fitness and mental health and how the two have intertwined. We're going to kick things off with a quick little discussion between Jason and myself, and then we're really excited to share the interview with Sarah Gilman.
Hello, hello, hello.
All right, welcome back. We're very excited to be here with you today. And today is really fun because we have an interview with a Hollywood actor.
Special guest, Sarah Gilman.
This is really cool. I mean, we connected with Sarah over Instagram, and we've just been sort of like commenting on each other's stuff. You know how Instagram relationships start. You like start to, you know, like, first you just like one of their stories and then you might actually respond to one and then you comment on their post. But Sarah has really just stood out to us because she's so, she's such an advocate for mental health awareness. And really not only that, but she really like takes action in her stories on social media where she like gives these reminders that are like, reminder to take a deep breath, reminder that your worth is not wrapped up in your image or your appearance and things like this that just like they feel very relatable. And we were just like, we would talk about it and be like, oh, she's so cool.
Yeah, super cool, super relatable. And it just like all of her posts, her stories just come across as very genuine, very warm. And we were happy to experience it in real life or in real virtual life, I guess, because, you know, sometimes you're never sure of like the persona that people put up online, whether or not it matches their actual persona. And we were pleasantly just very happy that everything lined up really well. She was just so awesome to talk to and genuine and warm and all the things.
Yeah, like literally she like her video popped up on the screen and we were just friends immediately. I was like, okay, we're friends now. This is awesome. But it was such an easy conversation about a really hard topic.
Yeah.
And which also goes to show just kind of like how much thought she puts into just her work with mental health advocacy, because she does more than just post online. She actually does a lot of work in that field as well outside of her day-to-day job as an actor. And so you can just tell that this is something that is so top of mind for her and really something that she is so passionate about, helping other people overcome whatever they're going through. Like not just talking about what she's been through, which is helpful enough on its own, is just sharing your own story so that people don't feel so alone, but also kind of taking it to the next level by really sharing action steps for people to start to get out of some of those mental spirals that you can get into.
Yeah, she was super open and transparent, like right off the bat. And it didn't really take much to get her going on her story. And something that I appreciated was during a couple of different sort of parts of the conversation, she wanted to kind of rewind a little bit and kind of rephrase and reword some of her statements because you wanted to make sure that it came out well and not in a way that it could potentially be harmful or negative.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is something we do constantly. We edit this podcast because of that, pretty much.
Yeah.
Because we always want to make sure, and it's not like we're auditing ourselves so much that it's like not truthful. Mm-hmm. It's really just like, oh, could that have been taken the wrong way?
Exactly.
Was that not exactly the way I meant to say that? And it's okay to amend your statements and to like really make sure it's coming across in a way that is helpful and not harmful. And yeah, I loved that she did that because that's something that we are very much on the same page about. Like, it's okay to do that. That's 100% appreciated.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, this episode came about because Sarah actually joined our RISE program for a little bit and she was doing the workouts. And at one point I reached out to her and I just said, hey, we would love to have you on the podcast, kind of thinking like she's definitely too busy for this. but she was really up for it and wanted to schedule it. So we were very excited to be able to chat with her and have this podcast episode happen. So this one's definitely a little bit different from some of the others that we've had. I feel like in the past, a lot of them have been a little bit more maybe like actionable in terms of fitness. Like it's a little bit more fitness, nutrition related. This is obviously much more mental health related, but we definitely bring in fitness to the conversation and we talk about what it's like to, like one of the things that I really wanted to talk to her about and I thought she touched on it so well was kind of like, how do we bridge the gap from when people say, oh, if you're struggling with your mental health, you should just work out because exercise is good for your mental health. But when you're struggling, what does that really look like? And how do you actually get there? And she had some really great insights on just kind of like real, because she's been through it, like real anecdotes and a real understanding of what that feels like to be in a place of feeling depressed or going through an eating disorder and how you can use fitness and physical health to help those things, but also kind of like how you can make it a step-by-step process and not just like, okay, I'm going to start running, because that was one of the examples that she used, was like people just think that, okay, they should start running because that feels like the easiest thing. She's like, but some people don't like running. It's like it was just a great conversation and I'm so glad that we were able to bring these two topics together.
Yeah, I mean, piggybacking off of that, I feel like she was just so wise.
Yeah.
Like she just imparted so much wisdom, and a lot of it had to do with like, yeah, personal experience mixed with like advocacy and talking about it and learning about it and just like everything together. She wasn't just giving basic like blanket statements that you hear all the time on social media that are just like basic headlines and stuff. She really dug deep and kind of went talked more about the nuance, the gray area, things that we try to do with health and fitness. We try not to just go with the standard blanket statements that you hear all the time, but be like, well, what if someone has this sort of background? Or what if someone has this sort of issue? Like, how do you work around that? When does this case not apply? And she really went into a lot of detail, and we definitely appreciated her approach.
And one of the things we're always talking about is that fitness is so much more, exercise, wellness, whatever you want to call it, is so much more than your physical body and your appearance or whatever, you know, like there's so much more to it. And we haven't really fully touched on the mental health side of things. So it was really nice to be able to do that today. And I think that that's something that we'll do more in the future, because it is there is so much research out there that really does talk about how much exercise can contribute to more positive mental health outcomes. And so this was a great way to get that conversation started. And we're really, really, really grateful for Sarah for coming on and helping us kick that off. Okay, so now that we've just raved about Sarah for the last 10 minutes, let's actually get into the interview. We hope you enjoy it. Please welcome Sarah Gilman. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh my gosh, this is so surreal. I know. So fun.
Same. This is so cool.
I
love
this. I always have a little bit of I'm a little bit jaded about social media, and then I like experiences like this happen and I'm like, oh my gosh, my new friend.
I know, exactly. I totally get that. I totally agree. Yeah.
I am so excited. I can't believe this all came out over just connecting on Instagram, and I'm so happy to be here.
It's so cool. I am obsessed with your Instagram, especially your stories, because you do all these reminders of like, reminder to, you literally will be like, reminder to take a deep breath. And I'm like doing it with you. Like, thank you for this. It really is so helpful.
The way you deliver it just seems very just real, authentic. And it's like a friend just kind of giving you these reminders and gentle like affirmations and stuff like that. It doesn't seem preachy or mantra-y. It just feels very genuine. And we really appreciated it.
I really appreciate that. It all came about. I went through my first relationship during the pandemic. And like loss of the whole like first love thing. And those reminders started as kind of the things I wish someone would tell me on the day to day. Because it's really hard to reach out to your friends and be like, hey, I'm really struggling right now. Can you remind me to drink some water?
Yeah.
Like, you know, that like it's okay to feel alone, and that's a natural part of feeling. So thank you. So that means a lot.
Oh, that's so nice. And honestly, that's, I feel like we connected on social media. I don't even remember how exactly, but basically like kind of with a similar ethos of just wanting to be on social media as a way to help people feel a little bit better about themselves, because a lot of times that's the opposite of what social media can do. And we just saw that in you so much, and it was just so fun to connect. So we're very happy that now we're friends. Now we're doing this thing.
We're friends. I love it.
So we're really excited to have you on for this episode, because we know that you've done so much amazing work already in terms of mental health awareness and suicide prevention. And we kind of want to give you a chance to give us a little bit of background before we start asking you some more specific questions on mental health. Where did that journey start with for you? And what is your background in terms of dealing with mental health personally and advocacy?
So I'm 27 now, and my journey with mental health started when I was in middle school. So I was about 11. And I think it started where a lot of people started before the pandemic, maybe, which is that no one was really talking about it. And it wasn't a conversation until something went wrong, per se, you know, quote unquote. And so I've always felt that I'm a pretty deep feeler. And to a degree, I grew up, you know, you don't have an emotional education. And I didn't really know how to deal with those feelings or manage them in a really healthy or productive way. And when I was in middle school, I also started exhibiting really serious signs for OCD, which is obsessive compulsive disorder. So it's a mental health disorder that is kind of categorized by these deep fears or obsessive thoughts. They feel very imposed. They don't feel natural. It's almost like you're in a cage of your mind. And then you deal with them by carrying out compulsions. And so the very stereotypical view of that, of course, is you fear of germs, and you placate that by making sure your apartment looks super neat and you're like Monk and everything is, you know, 2 inches apart. And for me, that was really a deep fear of, you know, something. If I didn't pick up like a used battery in the street, if I didn't carry with me everything that I touched, then I was afraid my family would die. So these are like the less kind of known, but very real and very common versions of OCD I think people don't talk about. And that was like where my mental health journey for me began. So I didn't really know how to cope with it. I was really, really fortunate to be in a situation where my parents were able to be sympathetic, though they didn't understand, and really bring me to resources like therapy and medication, which did wonders. But at that point, I was also diagnosed with depression and anxiety. And I learned some unhealthy coping mechanisms for that, mostly self-harm. So that was how I learned how to deal with that. And again, I think to a degree, because those conversations weren't common, it was also my way of trying to ask for help without knowing how to verbalize that ask for help. So that's kind of when it all started, and it just continued. I started thinking about suicide at a young age. I was hurting myself consistently. And I think that I wasn't making eye contact with it. I was finding ways to kind of use it to manage and then carry on in other ways. And I started acting at a very young age around the same time, partly as a way to kind of escape my own life and escape those struggles that I didn't know how to come into contact with. And unfortunately, because of the nature of Hollywood and child acting, in some ways that was really helpful. In some ways, it exacerbated the issue. And I think that's also where some of my difficulties with eating and exercise also started to come into play, because I've always found exercise to be part of my identity, per se. I mean, I played sports growing up. I love it. I love being outside and running around like barefoot. But I think, you know, the focus from Hollywood is so aesthetically oriented, instead of how do you feel? How is this like, check in with your body. Are you pushing it too hard? Are you doing this for yourself or at yourself? And so at that time I developed an eating disorder because I gained weight while I was on Disney Channel, and there was a lot of social media backlash against that. And that led to a beginning of my relationship with a distorted view of eating and exercise and aesthetics, and having to manage that and feeling like I had to fit into boxes that people put there for me. So those just kind of started to intertwine in the way that anything mental health related really can. until I personally hit my own little perfect storm in college. And that's where I hit my little rock bottom. And my struggle with suicide really came to a head right there. My eating disorder behaviors were just increasing and I was still self-harming. And I really came to a crossroads where it was, is this the path I'm going to continue down, or am I going to find a way to make eye contact and manage these behaviors and these impulses and find a better way to be with myself? Mm. And that in the end led to all the mental health advocacy work I do, and trying to, you know, I've been really fortunate to be able to create a better, healthy relationship with my brain and myself, and learn more about why I do what I do and why those have been my impulses. And I just want to make it known that anyone else can have that same journey, like starting from a place of curiosity, and you're going to be your own roommate for the rest of your life. You can learn how to manage these things.
Mm. Oh, I love that so much. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. That was so open and honest and vulnerable. So thank you. I relate so much to where you're at right now I'm curious if we relate on this, mm-hmm. that I've gone through a lot of personal struggles with disordered eating and body image as well. And now I do feel that sometimes being an advocate or sort of speaking out about this is not only hopefully helping the other people on the other side, but also continuing to help myself. And those reminders that I'm like, it doesn't have to be this way, are just as much for other people as sometimes they are for me. Do you feel like you experienced that as well?
100%. I think it's the same thing with the reminders that you all mentioned that I do on my social media. So much of it, of course, it's authentic in that I truly believe it and I want to share it with other people, but it's also just as much for me because this is an ongoing journey. Yeah. You don't just recover from these things. I think you continue to recover and you learn how to manage them. And I think the biggest metaphor for me in my own mental health and eating disorder journey has been this toolkit that I carry with me. It's not that I magically got rid of or, you know, fixed. And I don't really like that kind of vocabulary anyway. I mean, we're not problems to be fixed. We're just complex beings to understand better. But I think back to your point, it's like these reminders or talking about these things are just part of the toolkit of continuing to remind myself the only way out is through. So yeah. How do you keep going through?
Yeah. Now, can you bring us back? So you talked about you were an athlete in high school. I had to ask because I looked this up on Wikipedia. Did you actually play football in high school, like on the football team?
I did. It was it was one of the best and worst experiences I've ever had, I think. Going into high school, since I was already acting, I didn't think I would have time to play sports, which was heartbreaking for me. So I decided to manage a bunch of sports. And one of the sports I managed was the boys football team. We didn't have the girls football team. It was only boys football team. And I fell in love with it. Like being on the sideline, just doing stats, doing water. I was like, this is an amazing sport. They just get to run around and hit each other. Like, why would you not sign up for this? And so the next season I approached my coach and I asked, you know, I want to try out for this. No girl's ever done that. We had a few female kickers, but no girl ever completed Hell Week. And of course, it's like, you know, then you see the double standards of a system where it's like, we had to bring my parents in and get their permission and talk through it all together. And there were certain things throughout the season, like when we did lock in, that I wasn't with the boys, I was in separate rooms for sleeping. You know, I think a lot of the parents were concerned about my motives. As was the entire school, it actually became a big social thing like, is she doing it to get guys?
Oh my God.
I was like, you guys have obviously never gone to football practice because this is not how I would get guys. Trust me, this is not how. Anyway, but it was, I think I did play. I was a tailback on offense and a running back, or a cornerback on defense, and I wasn't very good. So through all my sporting endeavors, I've been a jack of all trades, master of none, where I'm like, okay, I'm passable. No one's looking at me being like, she's holding us back, but no one's like, she's going to steal the show. That's been a great place for me. I'm super happy there in the middle. Football was not bad. I was very bad. And, but it was the first time where I just decided you don't have to excel at this. You can just do it and you can get it done. And I think that was one of the first lessons, and like mental resilience is learned.
Yeah.
And you don't have to push yourself you know, past your breaking point every single time. And what's the point of the thing, right? Like I wasn't going to go to college. I didn't want to go to college for football. So why was I doing it? I was doing it to have fun.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if either of you relate to that. I mean, I think that people can fall into that hole so often when it comes to fitness and when it comes to physical activity, where it's like you forget why you're doing it in the first place.
100%.
And there's so much of a focus on like, you're doing it to make your body look a certain way. You're doing it to like get these aesthetic results or, you know, lift up heavy things in front of people. How do you all, you know, keep that perspective?
Well, just like what you said, like the assumption from other people can really cloud like your even understanding of why you're doing it, and it can make you forget why you're doing it. And so I think there is such an assumption with fitness that it's all about how you look and all about changing your body or all about losing weight. And like, there's all of these assumptions that are made. And for us, when we owned our gym, we saw so many people on a daily basis coming in who were nervous about working out, who weren't sure what to expect. And their assumption was that our assumption would be that they were there to lose weight or that they were there to change their bodies, but maybe they were there for their mental health, or maybe they were there because they wanted to get stronger. Like there are just all these different reasons, but I think that everyone's assumptions around fitness can almost make it feel less enjoyable for a lot of people, less approachable for a lot of people. So we are definitely working toward taking away those assumptions and being like, there is so much more to fitness than the way your body looks or the goal of changing your body.
100%.
Yeah.
I'm trying to imagine young Sarah Gilman in middle school struggling with mental health, but then also putting herself out there in front of, you know, plays and musicals and stuff like that, and then going to the boys football team. Like, what an amazing dichotomy between these two sides.
Well, I'll send you pictures of the little Sarah in pads. Yeah. So you can,
I love that.
I think that one's just kind of hard to get to.
Okay, so I would love to talk to you about this because we hear so much about fitness is, or exercise is, a really great way to mitigate mental health struggles, and exercise is great for depression, great for anxiety, all of these things. And there is research, there's, you know, peer-reviewed articles that say that this is the truth. But I know, because I've gone through depression, and I'm sure you know, that even if you enjoy fitness, sometimes when you're in your darkest place, it can be really hard to make that leap to actually get going. And do you have any advice for people who are struggling right now who might be like, I know this might be good for me, but I just can't see myself getting into it right now?
I do. And I took a deep inhale because I think this is going to be a pretty, there's going to be a few bullet points to this answer. Mm-hmm. So one, research has shown, it's pretty, you know, established scientifically, that exercise can be an amazing strategy when you're dealing with mental health and mental health issues. I think that for me, that's been huge in my own personal journey with non-suicidal self-injury, which is kind of the more clinical psychology term given to self-harming, where it's been shown to be an effective treatment of sorts, an alternative. And when I started reading about that, I was like, this is so great. I have my magic pill. I have my silver bullet. As long as I like stay up to date on this, then we're good to go. And I have solved this issue of mine. And then, of course, it's not that simple. Because like you said, Lauren, there are times when you can barely get out of bed, or you can barely motivate yourself to, you know, reach out to a friend, much less go out and run 4 miles or whatever you want to do.
Right.
And I think one of the first things there was, to me, redefining what it meant to exercise. Because especially coming from an athlete's perspective, I was very much like, it's not a workout, it's not exercise unless you're pushing yourself, unless you're hitting metrics, unless you're getting PRs. Like, if it's not that, it doesn't count. And I hate that vocabulary because I used to put myself in a prison of it, the whole like, it doesn't count thing. And I think a huge journey for me, and this started, I went to treatment for my eating disorder when I was in college. And one of the first things they do is just take away movement. I was in a residential treatment facility, and after meals, we had to sit for 2 hours supervised to make sure you're not trying to find ways to burn off calories, or you're not going and, you know, getting rid of food other ways. And when you started the longer you were there and the better you were doing per se, you got privileges, which included like going for short walks or doing yoga. But when I originally got there, it was so much sitting, so much quote unquote doing nothing. And from my point of view, like I have to always be productive. I have to always be progressing forward. I have to always be getting to something new. It was really difficult to just challenge myself to be as I am, to just be and fight back against this idea that, again, like with fitness, you always have to be progressing to something else or pushing yourself or in pain or whatever that may be. So the first thing I had to do when it came to using exercise effectively for my mental health was figuring out how to redefine what it meant to exercise. And for that, I changed it to movement. Like I have so many connotations with the word exercise that I couldn't even use it. Yeah. So it became like movement is a good band-aid, treatment, whatever it may be for mental health struggles. Mm. And to me, that includes walking, dancing, you know, sometimes just tapping my feet. Walking up and down the stairs in my house, like really just redefining the building blocks of what it meant to move. And, you know, trying to take away metrics for myself. Like if I'm going to go out for a run, I don't need to do it for this long. I don't need to have this pace. Just step outside, put on some running shoes. And sometimes that's the most you can do when you're having a hard day, and letting myself know that that was enough.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other big things that no one was talking to me about was exercise. Different types of exercise has different effects on your mental health at that point. Mm-hmm. So what I started realizing was like, oh, there are some cases when I'm feeling really anxious or panicked that running makes me feel more anxious and more panicked, because it's like it's simulating that increased heart rate, that kind of fight or flight mode. So everyone tells you, hey, if you're struggling mental health wise, just go out and exercise. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go do that. And then I was like, I'm feeling worse. I'm feeling panicked and I'm feeling scared. And I don't know why, because I'm doing what everyone told me. And it comes back to what you guys talk a lot about, which is this kind of idea, this like black and white thinking of one size fits all, no pun intended, when it comes to like workouts and regimens and, you know, moves. And it's just not true. You have to, I think step two, other than redefining exercise, step two was thinking about what exercise worked for me personally and when.
Yeah.
So sometimes the best thing I could do for myself was walking. Sometimes it was hiking. Like when I'm in a really hard, more kind of suicidal mindset, the best thing I can do is go hike somewhere where there's a view, because seeing large expanses of like the city or land underneath me like really grounds me in the present. Like I'm not going to get that from an Instagram influencer. Like that's not one size fits all advice.
Right.
So I think step two is really getting to know yourself on that front and figuring out what works for you specifically.
I love that. And on that point, that's a place I sort of just kind of like want to own up to growth on our end, because as early personal trainers, there were so many things that we said were not good forms of exercise. You know, like we would be like, I remember specifically my mom was doing Zumba, and she was never an active person. And so she was like just starting to get into fitness, and she was taking Zumba classes. And meanwhile, I was a new personal trainer learning all about strength training. And so I'm here talking to her about how she really, like, that's really not doing anything. Like if you want to actually burn more calories in a more efficient way, and I'm talking to her in such a clinical way of like, if you want to do this goal you never told me you had, because this is what the assumption is, then you need to do this and not that, without taking the time to say, why do you like Zumba? What is that doing for you? Outside of just how many calories you're burning and how much muscle you're gaining and all those things, like, what is this doing for you? And I think that we now know it's so obvious to us that fitness is so much more than the X's and O's. But I think that there are a lot of people who still do view it as this is the superior form of exercise because of all of this research in terms of muscle growth and all of this stuff. And that's just not what matters. And so you just put that so beautifully as to just asking yourself, and it's not even just, you know, in this phase of life, it can be today in this moment right now, what is the thing that's going to serve me the best in terms of movement and going with that?
No, 100%. I think it begs the question, what use is it if it's the best or if it works for everyone else, if it doesn't work for you?
Yeah.
Because if you're at the end of the day, if it's not going to help you because you're not going to be able to, you know, consistency over intensity is the biggest thing here, especially when it comes to your mental health. If it's not going to be able to be a consistent part of your life, then what's the use? When I was on Disney and I was struggling with some of the feedback I was getting about my weight, I went to my managers and my agents and I was talking to them about, like, should I be losing weight right now? Like, what can I do to be a better actress, to better fit into what I should do? And they said to me, and I'll never forget this because I think it's true of exercise as well and anything really, hopefully. It's like, you're not like Cinderella's foot. We don't need to change you to fit into this role. If it doesn't fit, we get a different role and find one that fits you, who you are. We're not going to cut off your toes to get into the shoe. Let's just find a shoe that fits. And I think it's the same thing. I think so often we have this mindset of, if something's wrong, if I don't fit in here, I need to change myself in order to fit. And I think I see that a lot. I saw myself with exercise, where I was like, oh, if I'm not enjoying or able to consistently keep this form of exercise in my schedule, it's because something's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. It's because I'm lacking when it comes to my, you know, mental strength of will. And I need to fix that in order to do Pilates consistently. Mm-hmm. Maybe, shocker, Pilates just isn't the workout for me. And so on and so forth, other places. So I think that's the third thing I had to learn when it comes to exercise. Is just find what works for you. Don't change yourself to work for everything else. You won't be able to do it. And then you'll just be more down on yourself than you were in the beginning.
Totally. Love that. Yep. It makes total sense. Yeah. And another area where I know I've struggled, and I'm sure based on your history, this is probably going to resonate with you as well, is that, and you mentioned this was actually really interesting that you mentioned this with the eating disorder recovery center, that they actually didn't let you do movement, because there is a struggle for me where a lot of my mental health struggles were based around body image. So then the gym sometimes could reaffirm some of the mental struggles that I was going through, right? And so, like, having fitness be a part of my life in a conventional way could actually play further into some of the things that I was struggling with. And so I think that what you're saying is, like, you don't have to go the conventional route. Like, you can do things that just feel good for you emotionally, mentally, and physically. That's a really powerful thing for people to hear, because we do sometimes think that there's only one way to go about fitness. And if that is going to bring up negativity for you, then that's maybe not going to be the best thing for your mental health.
No, 100%. And I think you're also bringing up a really interesting and important point, which is, I'm going to backtrack a tiny bit in terms of, like, this is a point that I really wanted to make today, that I think we've developed this idea, especially in the pandemic, that mental health, being mentally healthy, is always feeling good, is feeling happy and energetic and energized and being able to do what you want to do at any given time. And I think that's not true. Mental health is having emotions that make sense in the context they're in, and then learning how to manage in a healthy and productive and broad sense those emotions. Like, it's healthy to be sad. It's healthy to be angry and scared. The idea is, are you feeling those things in a context where they make sense? And do you have the tools to effectively manage them? And I think there's a similar kind of string there with fitness, where being fit, or, you know, being energetic, or whatever your, you know, goals may be, is not just being able to get up every day and run 10 miles or lift, you know, twice your body weight in anything. It is good to feel, you know, tired and give yourself days of recovery. It is good to, like, be able to meet your body and mind where it's at in any different context and figure out as you go, what does my body need today? And approach that without value. I think we have such an inclination to assign value to everything. Like, what, you know, this workout is better than that workout, or, you know, this feeling is better than that feeling. And when you try and take away that value judgment and take away the binary of good and bad, I think it's a lot easier to have flexibility and grace with yourself. And I think that it's a lot easier to stay even-minded when you're not consistently judging yourself.
Yes. Oh, perfect. I love that.
Chef's kiss.
Oh, perfect. It's so good. That's so good.
Can I ask you a question really quickly?
Yeah, of course.
Because I think this is a big thing I'm consistently still trying to learn how to handle, especially when you design your life so you're coming face to face a lot with the things that can trigger you or can push you towards old behaviors. Mm. I mean, even now, spending a lot of my time doing mental health advocacy, it puts me face to face with a lot of the thoughts I had when I was at my lowest points. Mm. And I do have it's a consistent schedule of checking in with myself and making sure I'm using my mental health toolkit. But how do you manage consistently immersing yourself in a field that hasn't progressed in the way that you two have grown, isn't kind of making eye contact with the ways they've changed, and is probably, don't let me put words in your mouth, but acting as pricking points for all of the things that used to set you off?
I think that for us, I mean, this feels like very general advice that you hear all the time, but it's so powerful, is unfollowing accounts and people who make you feel bad about yourself and who perpetuate the things that you're trying to get away from. And that seems very straightforward and easy, but it's really not when it's become so normalized that you don't even recognize it sometimes. And it can be hard too, because I know for me, it's early on when I started to try to do this, it was but they give good advice on this and I don't want to miss out on that. And it's in reality, you can find somebody else who's giving good advice on a topic that you're interested in without also making you feel bad about yourself. And a lot of times it's not about the person who's doing that, right? If there are people out there who are weight loss coaches, I'm not going to follow them because I'm not interested in that. And they might be smart, they might be good at what they do, they might be valuable for a lot of people. But for me personally, that's not the type of content that I want on my feed. That's not the things I want to consume. And I don't want that to be constantly in my ear. So I'm just not going to follow them. And so it's not saying some people are good, some people are bad, these people have bad intentions, these people have good intentions. It's really asking yourself what affects you personally and try to get that out of your general feed, essentially, right? So that's a big part of it for me.
On a kind of a side note to that, you know, Lauren's talking about curating her feed in a way that kind of doesn't trigger that sort of side of things. But I remember having conversation with Lauren about parenting groups and parenting social media accounts and Facebook groups. And there would be a number of accounts and Facebook groups that would be very helpful, provide great advice. But then there were others that were ultimately just kind of shamey and judgmental. And she would always come back from reading these posts feeling bad about what we fed our kids that day or how we treated our kids that day and just all this sort of stuff. And I'm like, well, why did this feeling suddenly arise? And she would disclose about a couple of the different Facebook groups and different accounts. And I was like, just unfollow them. It's the same advice we give people about weight loss and muscle building and whatnot. And she was like, well, but they do sometimes offer great advice about this. It's just just funny how there's different parallels for all of life, really. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. And so it can be very hard to do when you think you're going to be missing out on something. But ultimately, I think it's really important. I think the other side of it is just, I kind of mentioned this earlier, but speaking about it more, in some ways it can remind you that this is an issue. For me, I'm I feel sometimes so far removed from where I was 10 years ago or 15 years ago that I almost sometimes can forget that that was even a part of my life. And I think it's important for me to talk about it because I don't want to get so far removed from that that I forget that that's something that someone else could be going through and that I start to speak in a way that doesn't necessarily have empathy for someone who's going through that right now. So I think for me, it really is just the constant reminders, speaking out about it, remembering my story, remembering stories of all other people that I've worked with, and keeping that at the forefront of what we talk about and hopefully seeing that change come across in other accounts and things like that.
I love that. I think you're reminding me about something that I've learned in my own journey and then forgot, which is a lot of healing, a lot of growing is just inherently uncomfortable because it's change. Mm-hmm. And even when I was you know, on paper, recovering from my eating disorder and learning how to deal with it. It didn't feel good because I was, you know, we develop these tendencies, we develop these things and responses to what we need at a certain time. Like, I have a lot of sympathy for myself when I was struggling with an eating disorder, when I was struggling with self-harm, because that is how I knew at that point in time how to get through what I needed to get through. And so I have sympathy for, you know, why I treated myself in those ways, because it's how I knew how to survive at that given point in time. But I also forgot that it wasn't like getting better was fun. It wasn't like recovering was a good time. It was difficult, but I, you know, when you have that reason, that why to keep doing it and to keep going to help sustain you, and to, you need those support systems and that community around you, whether it's a partner or family or friends or a support group, like, it makes that journey a lot easier. But it's hard. It's like, because unfollowing those, like, I had to mute a bunch of my friends who, you know, I love them dearly. I love seeing them, but seeing their pictures of what they were doing or, you know, the projects they were working in was really, really difficult for me. And it's like a reminder of like, oh, okay, doing that isn't saying I don't love them. It's not saying that they don't matter to me, but how can I be there for them in real life? How can I show up for them if I'm building all this weird resentment because of our, you know, different social media lives? That makes no sense. And so I think you're totally right. And it's so much of sitting in the discomfort of getting to know yourself. I think nowadays we're inundated with so much information that's just telling you how to feel or making you feel something so quickly that you don't even realize it's influencing you, or telling you what to think or what to wear or how to exercise. And it has replaced the need in ourselves to sit down, think about what we really want, like who you are as an individual, and then start from there. And it's uncomfortable. It's like inherently uncomfortable sometimes to spend time with yourself, especially if you're not used to it, to just block out the world and dig into that. But I think that's the starting step for it all.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's so much, like you just said, like there's so much pressure to be someone else. That's what it feels like a lot of the time, is that you're on social media, you're just looking for ways to be someone else. And that shouldn't be the way that we go through life, is like, we should be looking for ways to be the best versions of ourselves. And so when we come at, whether it's social media or fitness or acting or whatever we want to do, as how can I do this as the best version of myself, we're just going to look for answers in different places, and we're going to start to ask ourselves different questions, and it's just going to be hopefully a more positive experience in the long run, because you're not trying to become someone you're not.
I love that. That just made me all like bubbly and giggly inside. Something about that sentence when you just said it is like, when you like approach what you're trying to do coming from the place of how can I be the best me, because the possibilities are endless. Then it's about, where do you want to go and who are you and what do you want, versus how can I meet this metric of who someone else is?
Yeah
if that makes sense. It's like, it's about growing instead of shrinking.
Yes,
because to be something else you have to fit into another box. Right. To be whatever, you know, whatever iteration of you, you can just grow into it. Oh, that's so beautiful.
I love that. And so your smile just like growing as you're saying it. Oh, that's so great.
I'm excited.
All right. So I want to ask you one more thing, which is, now that you, or not now that you, you've been in Hollywood for a long time, you've been famous for a long time, how has it impacted your view on health and fitness? Has it been positive? Has it been negative? And how do you deal with pressures that you're feeling from society, from people in Hollywood, because everyone has sort of similar things in their lives, people that might be judging them or they feel like they're being judged. How do you handle that? How do you deal with that?
I think, to your first question, the way that Hollywood has made me feel about health and fitness, but also how I look and how I am and how I act, is that there is a defined right or wrong. And I think part of that is from the stories that we see. And I think stories are starting to become more diversified. And I don't just mean that in a representation way. I also mean that in the types of stories and the types of endings and the beginnings and the characters that we're seeing. But I think when I was growing up, for sure, I felt like when I wore something to a red carpet, it was either good or bad. And more often than not, you know, I was more self-critical than I was self-affirming. And I think the same thing with, I think a lot of things became a means to an end. So exercise became a means to an end. It wasn't just a way to feel better or exercising for the sake of moving. It was exercising to shape my body in a certain way that I thought it needed to be in order for me to get roles. Or making my body look a certain way so that I thought that people would love me, because in the films and in TV, everyone who is loved looks very similar. And so it became, a lot of things became a means to an end, with the end being how to change myself to be lovable. And I think I'm still on that journey of breaking those thoughts down. And I'm still reminding myself that I am lovable and I don't need to change A, B, C, D, E, F to, you know, be worthy of love and care and the kindness that I try and put out into the world too. I don't need to change myself necessarily in order to receive it. So I think, you know, at the beginning of it all is just belief systems. And belief systems, no matter how flawed, are difficult to leave behind. And a lot of days, I think, honestly, I fake it till I make it. I repeat the things I want to believe, even when I don't believe them. And I hope that, and I have seen in the past, and it has worked for me, that if I do that enough, I start to believe it. And I think also, to what you were saying on Instagram, a key part of it for me has been designing my environment. So taking away those points of comparison, unfollowing the people that make me feel bad about myself, not because they're trying to, but because it's constantly pricking at my own idea of what I should be and who I have been. It's impossible to, you know, give up a belief system or give up a behavior when you're in the middle of doing it or surrounded by it all the time. Like, if I want to grow my hair out, but I'm standing there cutting it every 5 minutes, it's just not going to grow.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Right.
And so I think that a lot of learning to love myself or learning to leave behind the more kind of toxic behaviors or mentalities has really been leaving them behind, like extracting myself from those. And half of that has been mental and has been internal and been pinpointing the thoughts that I have and learning how to leave them behind. And for anyone who wants to look into that, CBT and DBT are two types of therapy that are very, very, very helpful for that. But on the other hand, it's designing my environment to set myself up for success in the same way you would if you were starting a new job and had to get up earlier than normal. You know, maybe you're going to lay out your clothes ahead of time. Maybe you're going to make some make ahead breakfast meal or make sure that your alarm has two snoozes set instead of one. It's how can you find the ways in your life to support your goals? Because self-control is a fallacy. The people who have the best self-control just have to use it the least. So I think it's about mentally and physically finding ways to set yourself up for success. And of course, that all is preceded by figuring out what you want for you.
I love it. Before we go, are there any final words of wisdom that you want to offer our audience before we let you go?
There's a quote I really like from a book on the history of risk, but that's not important. There's a quote I like. It's, order is impossible to find unless disorder is there first. And I used to judge myself a lot for not being in the place that I wanted to be in already, or not hitting the benchmarks or whatever it may be. And I think it behooves us all to remember that you have to start somewhere. Anywhere is good. There is no right or wrong way to take a step forward. You just need to take a step forward and have, you know, have grace with yourself for being a mess sometimes.
Oh, it's perfect. Thank you so much, Sarah. We really appreciate having you on.
Thank you for having me. It was wonderful.